Good afternoon and welcome to Living Room. I'm your host, Chris Welch. The latest missive message from Osama bin Laden, January the 9th, mentioned a book that he liked, Rogue State. He said all Americans with any conscience should read it. Well, we're going to talk to the author of that book on Living Room today, Rogue State, A Guide to the World's Only Superpower. The notion that terrorist acts against the United States can be explained by envy and irrational hatred and not by what the United States does to the world, i.e. U.S. foreign policy, has been written on the face of the Bush administration ever since the attacks of September 11, 2001. The fires were still burning at Ground Zero in New York when Secretary of State Colin Powell declared, "Once again, we see terrorism, we see terrorists, people who don't believe in democracy." Well, then, if that's not the truth, what is the truth? We will turn for an answer or two or three or five to William Blum. Mr. Blum is an author. He worked for the State Department for a while. He also worked with Philip Agee in London, exposing CIA personnel and their misdeeds, their project, Mr. Agee being a former CIA officer. His book on U.S. foreign policy, Killing Hope, U.S. Military and CIA Inventions Since World War II, first published in 1995, has received international acclaim. Noam Chomsky called it far and away the best book on the topic. He was one of the recipients of Project Censored's Awards for Exemplary Journalism in 1999 for a story about how the U.S. gave Iraq the material to develop chemical and biological warfare capability. He's written a number of books. One of them got on the Osama bin Laden bestseller list in Mr. bin Laden's address to the world received in the first beginning days of January. He mentioned by name Rogue State and suggested that Americans of conscience, if they believe what they say about democracy, should read this book. The title, Rogue State, A Guide to the World's Only Superpower. And the investigative journalist, William Blum, joins us on the telephone. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Hi, Chris.
Well, so with friends like Osama bin Laden, what's this done to sales of your book?
It's too soon to tell. Keep in mind that the figures we hear about Amazon are not sales figures. Those are comparative rankings. And I would imagine that if Amazon was contacted by 50 people on the same day about the same book, that would send the rankings of that book shooting way up. So I'm not assuming that it's going to be a huge bestseller. In fact, I know it won't be.
Well, but I mean, are you embarrassed, ashamed, or glad of a mention by Osama bin Laden?
I'm glad. And when I've been interviewed by the mainstream media, which has been quite often in the past few weeks, many of them have been pushing me to say that I'm repulsed by what happened. But I don't say that because I'm not repulsed. Mm. What I do say is this. There are two elements involved in this. On the one hand, I have nothing but total distaste for any kind of religious fundamentalism and the kinds of society spawned by that fundamentalism, like the Taliban in Afghanistan. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, I'm part of a movement that has the very ambitious goal of slowing down, if not stopping, the American empire to keep it from continuing to carry out all those horrible things that we are opposed to. And to have any chance of success in slowing down the beast, we have to reach the American public. And to reach the American public, we have to have access to the mass media. And for that reason, I'm very glad that this happened, because I've had more access to the mass media in the past 3 weeks than I would ever have thought in my lifetime.
Hmm. Well, and with information that one reviewer called a bill of wrongs, an especially well-documented encyclopedia of malfeasance, mendacity, and mayhem that has been hypocritically carried out in the name of democracy by those whose only true love was power, a review of William Blum's book, Rogue State. And in fact, you start your book by saying, this book could be entitled Serial Chainsaw Baby Killers and the Women Who love them. Now, what do you mean by that, Bill?
One of the main problems that I, as an activist, have when in my with my speaking in public or writing, one of the main obstacles to reaching people is a very deep-seated belief that no matter what the government does in its foreign policy, no matter how bad it may look, no matter what harm may result, the government does mean well. Its intentions are always noble, and even though it may blunder and make mistakes here and there, and on the odd occasion even cause more harm than good, it does mean well. And that's that very deep-seated belief, which you'll find even amongst many anti-war activists, that's a barrier for people like me to reach the average American. And so much of my writing and speaking is an attempt to show that the U.S. government and its foreign policy does not, in fact, mean well by foreign peoples.
Now, you started out, you worked in the State Department, so you were part of the problem at one point.
I was working there in the midst
of course, you also worked at KPFA once upon a time,
right.
Speaking of being part of the problem.
I was in the mid-60s, I worked at the State Department as a computer systems analyst and programmer, but the reason I was there was to become a foreign service officer. I was a good, loyal anti-communist, and I wanted to join the cause. But then a thing called Vietnam came along and changed my mind completely and my life, and I lost any ambition to become a foreign service officer, and instead I joined the underground press, as it was called then, and that's how I began writing.
William Blum, our guest on the telephone, he currently sends out a monthly newsletter, The Anti-Empire Report, which shows you more about what he's about. Now, you mentioned Vietnam, and you mentioned, first of all, that you were a loyal American, which means, of course, that you were an anti-communist, because the U.S. foreign policy throughout the 40s and onward was all about the Red Scare and the communists are going to get you. And
right.
you point out in your book, Rogue State, the guide to the world's only superpower, many of the fallacies inherent in that policy over all those years. But it turns out we're using exactly the same kind of techniques and tactics in what is now being called the War on Terror.
Yeah, we've substituted the word terrorist for the word communist. And it's my thesis, which I have developed in my book, Killing Hope, that there was never any such animal as the international communist conspiracy. What you had instead was people all over the Third World desirous of an improvement and major changes in their societies. Changes which rub the wrong way with the American power elite. And so the American government moved to crush these movements or these governments in the name of fighting some evil called communism. And that's the excuse they use, that they were fighting an international communist conspiracy whose aim was to take over the world and for no socially redeeming purposes. Now we use the word terrorist and we invade all over for that, but we shouldn't place so much faith in that either.
Well, you say there was no real such thing as an international communist conspiracy, and your book makes a very compelling argument for there being no such thing as the battle to make the world safe for democracy, and we've learned definitely over the last couple of decades that democracy equals capitalism equals corporatism equals now globalization. But there are really terrorists, aren't there?
Yes, there certainly are anti-American terrorists, and I maintain that they are created by U.S. foreign policy, and there's no way to win a military victory over such people. We have to change our foreign policy if we want to change these people, and that's a major thesis of the book Rogue State. The first chapter is devoted entirely to that subject. And I think I present very compelling evidence, very well documented, including the words of American leaders. I quote a Defense Department report saying exactly that, that the rise in anti-American terrorism coincides with U.S. involvement in international affairs. And so it's very well documented, I think. And I think that is a major hang-up also of most Americans, along with the belief that the U.S. government means well, is the belief that anti-American terrorists are motivated by envy or hatred of freedom and American freedom and democracy, and even clothing styles and television and books and films and what have you. And this, there's no evidence for that at all. Major polls taken in recent years have shown that throughout the Middle East, the people have no problem to speak of with American culture or American freedom or democracy. It's what they hate is American foreign policy. That's been very clear in major polls taken by the Zogby organization and by the Pew Charitable Trust. And I quote those in my book.
William Blum's book is Rogue State, A Guide to the World's Only Superpower, in which you have extremely well documented, I got really stalled on your chapter 17 here, A Concise History of U.S. Global Interventions, 1945 to the Present. And then the next chapter, Perverting Elections. These are cases and points, and point of exactly how our foreign policy has been created, used to do what? I said it was that democracy equaled capitalism. Is
right. What the U.S. government means by capital, by democracy, is it has to do with corporations making these countries hospitable to multinationals, making sure they have the legal and financial mechanisms in place that make it easy for a multinational to come in and privatize everything and deregulate and push out the local companies and so on. That's what they mean by democracy. And I lost my track of thought for the moment, but
examples in the concise history.
That's a history of the interventions. In my book, Killing Hope, I have a number of examples of U.S. interventions spelled out in great detail. But that's the purpose of that book. In Rogue State, there's one chapter devoted to that same subject, but it has many more examples of U.S. interventions, only not with as much detail as is found in Killing Hope.
Mm-hmm.
But it covers 40 or 50 pages of the book.
Well, it's a very impressive and depressing and horrifying and eye-opening all at the same time litany. And since Iraq was definitely in the news today and is every day, and we're currently totally engaged there, and later on in this program, you are going to be hearing just a little bit from an incredible film entitled Operation Dreamland, in which the filmmakers were living 24/7 with 8 young men in the 82nd Airborne, just leading up to the fall of Fallujah, the Battle of Fallujah. An incredible eyewitness. You're right there in the middle of what is really going on in Iraq, which, unlike Vietnam, we're not seeing on our television screens in our living rooms. But to go to that particular one of the, since you go through the concise history of U.S. global interventions from 45 onward, and you start with France. Well, actually, you start with China, then you go on to France, the Marshall Islands, Italy, Greece, the Philippines. Of course, the Marshall Islands are now one of the few people voting with the United States whenever the subject of sanctions against Cuba come up, which is every single year in the United Nations.
Right.
So on Iraq here, I turn to this one, 1991 to 2003, and Bill Blum's piece in A Rogue State starts out Mental hospitals and prisons are filled with people who claim to have heard voices telling them to kill certain people, often people they'd never met before, people who had never done them any harm or threatened any harm. American soldiers went to the Middle East in 1991 to kill just such people after hearing a voice command them, the voice of George H.W. Bush. And Bill reminds us of the relentless bombing for more than 40 days and nights against one of the most advanced nations in the Middle East. 177 million pounds of bombs, etc., and the devastating health results, among many other things, more than a million children dead from all of these factors, even more adults. And that's pre whatever we're in now, Gulf War II.
Even pre-sanctions and pre-invasion of 2003, pre all the subsequent horror.
And then you've got this incredible quote from the U.S. Brigadier General William, no pun intended, I'm sure, last name, Looney.
Yeah.
And he was a director of this operation of the no-fly, quote-unquote, no-fly zones, which you point out, the authority for which Washington and London derive from each other, not the United Nations, as they would have the world believe. And a guy who was in charge of that says, if they, the Iraqis, turn on their radars, we're going to blow up their goddamn SAMs. They know we own their country. We own their airspace. We dictate the way they live and talk. And that's what's great about America right now. It's a good thing, especially when there's a lot of oil out there we need. That sort of says it.
Yeah, he was. I wonder if he was ever punished for that remark by the Pentagon.
Well, so then there's the next chapter about perverting elections. Give us an example of something. I don't know, that just to prove your point with some of the details about how our foreign policy has destroyed democracy. In fact.
Well, I think I give about 30 examples of serious interventions into elections all over the world, often by financing one party against others, or bribing certain parties to pull out of the election, or even stuffing ballot boxes, or doing countless other things to distort the election results. And this is such a flagrant abuse of our everyday repeated remarks about fighting for democracy. You know, we can't stand free elections. I mean, in the latest example, we interfered in the election in Palestine, and when the result was not to our liking, we said that we're not going to support the winner. So it's amazing, in the face of all this evidence, that so many Americans still believe that the U.S. government is concerned about democracy. If one, I'm always being faced with the chore of attempting to explain things to people who don't even want to know the facts. They're so convinced that the U.S. government is good for this or that, and I point out that they're not, and they are not moved because they're so convinced. They have this deep-seated belief that we mean so well.
Oh, here's a good one. The U.S. versus the world of the United Nations. That's another one of Bill's chapter. And here's an example of the kind of arm-twisting that goes on. And you mentioned in 2000, the U.S. Congress passed the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA. This promises, Bill says, the usual trade benefits to underdeveloped countries in return for the usual selling of their soul, like privatization of virtually everything, deregulation, ending price controls and subsidies on food, giving foreign multinationals the same rights as local companies, etc., and with an added requirement in the AGOA, agreeing not to, quote, engage in activities that undermine United States national security or foreign policy interests, unquote. And in November of 2002, the United States invoked this provision in complaining to Mauritius that its UN ambassador was not lining up with sufficient zeal behind Washington's latest draft resolution on weapons inspections in Iraq at the Security Council, and the ambassador was hurriedly recalled by his government.
Yeah. Sometimes what the U.S. government does in its foreign policy is so blatant that it flies over people's radars. They can't believe that things can be as obviously bad as they sound, and so it just passes by them. And it's my self-appointed mission to rescue 1,000,001 small bits of history from oblivion and put them all into one book. That's been my mission.
William Blum, and this book is Rogue State, A Guide to the World's Only Superpower. You can also go to www.killinghope.com.
No, .org.
.org, pardon me. .org, and find out more about what Bill is up to, and check out the Anti-Empire Report. If you'd like to get on the mailing list, you can send him an email at bblum, B-L-U-M, bblum6@aol.com. And previous issues of that report can be read on the Killing Hope website. So, meanwhile, you've been out meeting and greeting because of Osama bin Laden's mention of your book. What's it been like? Have you been, you told me that you'd been on college campuses.
Well, since this happened, only one campus, which had been scheduled some time before. It was purely by coincidence that it came up a few days after the thing with bin Laden broke. And instead of the expected 70 or 80 people there, there was 400 people, standing room only, and including many people who had announced beforehand they were coming out of hostility towards me, the young Republicans amongst them. And I was afraid of having my speech interrupted a lot, but as it turned out, they asked many hostile questions at the end, which is fine, it makes things more interesting. But while I was speaking, no one made any noise, and so I was quite appreciative of that.
Well, and what was it? What do you emphasize when speaking to that age group? This is the age group that's dying in Iraq for the American flag.
Yeah, I emphasize the points I've mentioned now about the U.S. government's foreign policy not meaning well, about the only solution to anti-American terrorism is to change our foreign policy, and I mentioned my views about the Cold War and the anti-communist international conspiracy myth. Those are the important things I touch upon in all my talks.
And how were you received on that occation, aside from the
I got a standing ovation.
Well, good for you.
Yeah. Not from everybody. Some people were still sitting.
But, William Blum, investigative journalist based in Washington, D.C., the author of Killing Hope, U.S. Military and CIA Interventions Since World War II, and Rogue State, A Guide to the World's Only Superpower. What do you suppose impressed Osama bin Laden with this book?
I would assume it was the first chapter in the book, which deals with the subject of the anti-American terrorists reacting to U.S. foreign policy, and not because they're mindless, crazed monsters who just hate freedom and democracy, but instead they are reacting to decades of very serious abuse in the Middle East by U.S. foreign policy. I would guess that's the chapter that most appealed to him.
You say that there are those on the left who are, when they're speaking, are apparently unconscious of what they're obfuscating. That's also in that same chapter. You're quoting Condoleezza Rice saying the Middle East being a hopelessness,
right,
providing a fertile ground for ideologies.
Yeah, I was speaking, I think, about the idea which many people on the left hold that terrorism comes out of poverty. And I think they are confusing terrorism with revolution.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't the same thing. I don't think poverty has anything to do with it. Almost all the hijackers of 9/11 were middle and upper class educated people. And bin Laden himself is, of course, a very wealthy family, and he's educated. So I don't think it has to do with poverty. I think it has to do with getting revenge against what the U.S. government has done to their homelands.
And you spell out in excruciating detail just what some of those things are in this book. And I thank you very much for doing so and for joining us today. And I look forward to your visiting the West Coast sometime soon.
I will certainly say hello when I'm there, yes.
You better.
Thank you very much, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. William Blum, and the book is Rogue State, A Guide to the World's Only Superpower. An incredible document, vastly footnoted, and the kind, it's like a dictionary. Well, one reviewer called it an encyclopedia.